It's Pac-12 versus SEC. We got a very special guest coming in from Tennessee. It's Michael Bratton, SEC Mike. Tell us more about what we'll hear, Big Ben.
SEC Mike from That SEC Podcast. We're going to talk with Mike about recruiting, revenue, commissioners, who he'd have a beer with in the SEC coaching ranks. And there is a little cursing, so cover your ears. Boom.
Boom.
With everything we're going through, so you got to start drinking on the holidays when you can.
I say it's like the Cougs oftens. Throw early, throw often, drink the tequila early and often.
Absolutely, man. Are they still going to be running that with Coach Leach gone?
Rolo might have him in the same set. I think he came from Hawaii where that's big, the run and shoot. So it'll be interesting to see Mississippi State and what Leach turns out with Costello down there now too.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering if I could get some insight on that guy because based on what I've seen, really shaky last year.
Yeah, he was in and out of hurt. Mike, let us give you the background on us and then you can tell us a little about how you became SEC Mike.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do have a slight SEC slant on our podcast that many people don't know about. If you look behind me, Ben and I met when we were in New York. I'm from Northern California. He's from Seattle. And mm-hmm. we meet up to watch football games. And ironically, we went to this sports bar in New York City called Ainsworth, which was an Alabama bar. And we couldn't find Pac-12 anywhere, not even on their corner TV. So we had to wait until after Bama played and stay up to like real late at night just to watch Oregon play Colorado. And that's when we said, hey, you know, we're missing out on the West Coast experience. We should come up with a podcast and just dedicate it to West Coast teams. So that's what started WST Podcast. I live in Los Angeles now. Big Ben's back in Seattle, but we stay connected and talk just for the love of West Coast sports.
Maybe not quite the same spiel on my end, but I actually used to live out in Los Angeles. I was working at Fox Sports, and then, of course, they made the decision to jump from, you know, written form to just straight video. So they fired everybody, and I got on with NFL.com, and then I got on with Saturday Down South, so I was working two jobs, but I was able to kind of parlay my, you know, resume at Fox Sports and NFL.com into a job at Saturday Down South, into a management position. And then once I started doing that a little bit, I really, you know, same as you guys, love talking SEC football. And I really like the spiel you guys got going on here with, you know, just talking West Coast Pac-12 football. That's kind of the thing I wanted to do because there's plenty of national college football out there. But, you know, I think if you really want to make a name for yourself, you got to be talking about what you're passionate about. And I really, you know, I'm a big fan of being, you know, conference specific. And because there's just not a ton of good content out there. So that's what I've been doing on my podcast, That SEC Podcast. And I do it with my cousins who they're not in the media. They're just regular dudes on the couch getting drunk on Saturday. So it's a nice little combo of someone that works in it. But I mean, I'm not, by no means am I, you know, thinking I'm like too good. I'm just like an idiot like everybody else. And then I got special cousins there on the other end of the line. So yeah, we just have a lot of fun with it.
Mike is one of those guys in Hawaii.
He is. Yeah. That's my cousin. He's out there. I don't know. Have you guys ever seen the movie Hurt Locker? It's about like a bomb squad type guy, but that's what my cousin is for real. He's one of those guys that was in Afghanistan during all that madness. And now he's out of the military, but he's like a private contractor. And apparently they still do that work in Hawaii. So he's out there living it up, and he owns, I call it a mansion. It's like a 5-bedroom house overlooking the water. It's beautiful. And yeah, he just is out there doing, I couldn't even explain it to you. I mean, he's doing bomb tech stuff, which is way over my head.
Does he get the SEC network?
You know, it's actually hard to come out to get by. It took him a year or two to actually get it. He was telling me one time they had it all installed, and then someone was mowing his damn lawn and somehow they sliced the cable. So that was, he finally got it installed. Then there was another season he didn't have it. So yeah, it's been a pain in the ass to get the SEC network, according to him.
He's got to get up at like 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. to watch the big noon game, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I was living in California, my buddies would call me back home and I would have to get my ass up around, you know, 8 just for the pregame. We'd call it breakfast with the Vols with all my Tennessee buddies. So yeah, I'd have to start drinking early, but I got to admit, I did really enjoy living on the West Coast for that aspect because all the games were over by, you know, 9:30, 10, and then you could go out and hit up the bars.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the same luxury here. We're trying to figure out when to kick off our games. We'll get into that a little bit later, Mike. But I want to start off by talking about recruiting. But I'll give you some data here real quick. And that's 4-1, 2-1, and 5-1. And those represent the number of SEC teams versus Pac-12 teams in the top 10 of the recruiting rankings the last 3 years. What's your pitch as an SEC coach as of late?
I mean, I think it's pretty easy. You want to play in the NFL if you're an elite prospect. You come to the SEC. And I mean, it's kind of hokey at this point to say, but just look at the NFL draft. I think it's 14 years running. SEC's dominated most picks. They always have the most first round picks. They just broke the record for most first and second round picks. Then they just broke the record for most first, second, and third round picks. So, I mean, it's just insane. There's more money being spent towards recruiting budgets, in my opinion. And I think if you really look at the, you know, the state of California, that's where I would assume the vast majority of Pac-12 players are coming from. But just seems like a trend. More and more of these guys are leaving. They're going to the SEC, and now Clemson's getting in there. So I think that's been a huge issue for the Pac-12, not getting those kids to stay home. And I can't really blame them because, you know, you want to talk the big noon game in the SEC, but really the big game is the 3:30 Eastern game on CBS. And I just don't know of anything else that's quite like that, particularly in the Pac-12. I mean, you do got your ESPN night games for sure, Fox Sports games, what have you, but you know, that CBS 3:30 game really is, it's almost like an NFL game. You know, it's just the pageantry. It's nationally televised. If a kid plays in California, his family, no matter, you know, what part of the country, no matter what cable package, people are going to have that CBS standard channel. So, you know, you go to your Alabama, your LSU, your Georgias, you're going to be on that game time and time again. I really do think, you know, we're joking around about the SEC network, but that's been huge for the league because I know that's a little bit more expensive, but I would assume the vast majority of people on the West Coast, whether they're able to get it or someone in their family or even the, you know, the restaurant down the street, someone's going to have it. So there's almost no option to miss an SEC game if one of your sons or what have you wants to go play in that league. Whereas, you know, I was living in Los Angeles. I couldn't even get the Pac-12 network because I had DirecTV. So it's like, I don't know what in the hell they're doing there, but they're really shooting themselves in the foot with the leadership there in the Pac-12. And I think that's part of it as well.
It sounds like everything you just said is things Kay Wynn and I have been saying all along about some of the issues with the Pac-12. Sticking on recruiting real quick, is the rumor true? Are players getting beat up in the SEC?
No, I don't think so. Kirby Smart, it was funny that you said it. He came out here recently and said, I mean, he didn't call out Dabo Swinney, but he was clearly talking about Dabo. Apparently, that's the big recruiting pitch at Clemson. You know, come to the ACC, the cupcake league of the nation. We only got one powerful team in this league, but you can remain healthy, get to the NFL. But no, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I know Tua has been banged up, and actually a lot of SEC quarterbacks here recently have been getting hurt, but if these kids were getting banged up, I don't think the NFL would be taking, you know, the chances on them. So, yeah, it is, you know, I don't want to say more dangerously because I think all college football is dangerous if you don't do it safely. But, yeah, I just don't think that SEC players are getting hurt more than anyone else. I think more than anything, if you're an NFL, you want to be able to study the games that you play against the top competition. So, yeah, there's an element to it being tougher. But at the end of the day, I think it's probably better for their NFL prospects.
Yeah, I think the tagline for the SEC should be, you know, playing the SEC, you're NFL ready, more or less. K1 and I talked about exactly what you said previously, and the amount of money that these SEC players are getting when they come out, commonly in the first round. How closely do you and SEC fans watch the transfer portal?
It's constantly on refresh over here. You know, as soon as the kids get through it, I mean, it took about 20 minutes until JT Daniels. I mean, I was writing stories on him. I had to write a feature on what he'd do to Tennessee, and I don't even believe he's been to the campus. You know what I mean? But I'm sure T. Martin's made that call. But yeah, anytime anyone jumps in the transfer portal, it doesn't matter, you know, if they, you know, I'm not making any assumptions here, but if someone's even done something criminal, they're like, well, hell, we can fix him. You know what I mean? Like, who cares? He can help the team. Let's go get him, you know? So
change of scenery. He'll be good.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this, but a couple of years ago, there was a Georgia player. He got busted for some kind of domestic situation, and then Alabama scooped him right up, and then he got charged with another one. And that's when the SEC had to institute a rule. Like, my God, if someone gets in a domestic situation, you can't just give them a get out of jail free card, because Nick Saban was going to do it. And if Nick Saban's going to do it, you better believe everybody else in the SEC, my God, they're going to do it.
Your rap sheet's only one page. We'll take you.
Absolutely.
Hey, Mike, any perception of the Pac-12 in your world? In the 2000s, or since 2000 to 2010, the Pac-12 does have a better record, football record, against the SEC.
Ooh,
I like that. A little big, Ben.
Gas on the fire, Mike.
Maybe, but last time I checked, you know, when they play a marquee team like an Alabama, they lose 50-10 or something crazy like that. But, yeah, the perception is this is a weak league, but you know, I've lived out there, and I don't necessarily think that. I've always, when I was living out there, my favorite team was Stanford, just because they somewhat resembled an SEC team, you know, physical line of scrimmage game. But yeah, I think it overall, that's kind of the perception. And I've even heard fans, when JT Daniels, you know, entered the portal, they said, my God, I don't want a soft Pac-12 quarterback. And it's, I mean, just, they're just talking out of their ass and don't know anything about it. You know what I mean? But yeah. I definitely think that's the perception, and you know, that they just don't care about college football like the SEC does. And I don't think anyone does, but that's not necessarily a good thing all the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Hey, Mike, last thing here. Recruits aren't leaving the South. That's for sure. I did a quick check on the state of Georgia, the top recruits since 2017, top 10. Davis Mills out of Norcross is the only guy. He left and went to Stanford. If he comes back to Atlanta, is he allowed in Buckhead?
Well, I don't know, because last time I checked, Georgia, I think I'm sure they would have wanted him. He's a five-star, but I think that probably was that class with Justin Fields, maybe, or Jake Fromm. So, and then, of course, they got Jake Meeson. So I don't think Bulldogs fans really even care. That tells you all you need to know about SEC recruiting. I mean, Davis Mills, probably one of the highest-ranked quarterbacks in that state the past decade, and they could care less because they've been racking up five stars outside of him.
So, Mike, I got some more data for you. I'll throw some numbers out there. You might even know this data. 45.3 million, 54 million, and 33 million.
Those are big numbers from a guy from the South. You got to slow it down here for me.
All right. 45.3 million, 54 million, 33 million. That is the revenue that the big three conferences distributed to their schools. The SEC was at 45.3 million. The Big Ten was at 54. And the Pac-12 was way, way behind at 33. And it goes back to your earlier point, the network, the revenue, the train that the SEC's got moving. What are some of the creative things, in your opinion, that the SEC's done to grow their football brand?
The biggest thing I want to say 2014 was the SEC network, because I don't think a lot of people knew that it would grow into what it has become. You know, adding Texas A&M has been huge. I don't necessarily think adding Missouri was as big, but and those numbers that you reference, they're supposed to just dramatically rise here in the coming years, because I referenced the deal they have with CBS for the game of the week. CBS, it looks like, is going to lose that. I believe CBS is paying around 40-something million for the entire package. And I'm not talking per year. I'm talking entire, like, 20-year period. And they're saying that's going to jump up to about $70 million a year. So, yeah. I mean, the SEC is going to clean up because ABC, ESPN is going to get that back. So I just think it's the revenue and just the, you know, entertainment value, where it doesn't matter where you're talking about in the SEC, whether it's in Alabama and Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, and then the other side, Florida, Georgia. And I know Tennessee's not been that competitive here recently, but it's still a massive, massive fan base. I mean, every week you're basically having a top 10 showdown in the SEC in some form or fashion. And then every now and again, you see a Kentucky, you know, they can win 10 games. We've seen Dan Mullen get Mississippi State to number one. We saw Hugh Freeze when he wasn't using his burner phone to get massages from these hookers and whatnot. I mean, he had Ole Miss rocking and rolling. So, and now they got Lane Kiffin. He's just a scummy. So, you know, they're going to be pretty good here soon. But I mean, just look around the league. There's an entertainment factor all across the board. Even when you go outside of the football, these coaches are damn personalities of their own. I mean, Coach O is the most popular coach in America right now. And I've even heard that. So he's buddies with the governor down there in Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
The governor is a Democrat. And of course, Louisiana, you know, not to get too political here, but it's a largely conservative state. And because he's friends with that guy, he won the election this year. And I was reading that at LSU not gone 15-0, that guy was out. So if he's good with Coach O, he's good with us, is kind of the mentality, you know?
Yeah, it's good to have friends in the right places. So my next question, it's an important one, and it's okay if the answer is zero. How many Pac-12 conference games do you watch in a year?
Oh, well, you know, like I said, I'm not like one of those guys that thinks, you know, the rest of the nation is trash or anything, but the truthful answer is zero. But it's only because on Saturdays and Sundays in particular, I mean, I'm just slammed. Like, I get a workout in the morning on Saturday about 2-3 hours before kickoff on noon Eastern time. And then I'm working till about 2-3 in the morning. And then I do the same thing on Sunday. So I just don't have time, because I try to watch every SEC game twice. It takes all week to basically do that before the next week. But yeah, I got no problem with Pac-12 football, but it's probably got to be a real mark. It's got to be like a Rose Bowl type game for me to watch one of those. But you know, when I was living out there, I was deep into the Pac-12. So yeah, I'm not a Pac-12 hater. I'm just so deep into the SEC that I just don't have time. I don't watch any of the other conferences, to be honest with you.
That's fair, and it's understandable. But I want to transition to the next question. So the Pac-12 is kind of wavering with, do we go head-to-head against the SEC and ACC with televised games at the same time? Or do we do Friday night games? We do Saturday night games? Do we do breakfast starts? If you were Larry Scott and you were the commissioner of the Pac-12, how would you position their marquee games on a weekend?
Well, I definitely wouldn't go against the SEC. That would be number one. But I mean, that's just me. But, you know, I think they would be wise to listen to the fans and what they want. I don't know why they don't do that more often. I guess, you know, it's driven mostly by television figures these days. But you're going up against the SEC, you're going to get murdered. Because when I was living out there, it seemed, of course, I was in Los Angeles, but it seemed like there were more transplants than anything out there. So that may not be a great city to judge that off of. But, you know, like when I went up to Eugene, those people, not only were they most hospitable fan base, I mean, no one tried to beat me up. And I was down there for like 2-3 days. That's unheard of in SEC country. I mean, you got to be careful. You got to roll with a couple boys if you're going to wear your opposing color in a rival SEC town. But yeah, I would really just see what the fan bases are feeling and kind of go with that. But because I've heard a lot of people say they're not a big fan of the night games in the Pac-12. So yeah, that's an interesting one. I sure as hell wouldn't go 9 a.m. in the morning though, because I couldn't imagine that's going to be much better. So just not left with a lot of options there in the Pac-12. And I guess just thinking out loud here, prime time, you know, 5 to 8 o'clock is probably the Pac-12 sweet spot. And I think that's probably why they're kind of stuck with giving all these fans the night games that they're hating.
They've got to figure this out, because their TV contract for the Pac-12 network expires in 2024. But to your earlier points, if they don't do something now, and then they're just, the gap is going to get increasingly bigger and bigger, because I believe the Big Ten is partially owned by Fox and the SEC network is partially or maybe wholly owned by ESPN. So there's a lot going on. And what we want to get your input, and Ben will ask you some questions, is, you know, what's going on with the commissioners? It seems like Larry Scott, everything he does is wrong.
Is it Greg Sankey?
Yes, sir. And Greg Sankey, and one thing I know about him, I think he front squats like 500 pounds. He's a beast.
Compare and contrast is the right topic for this segment, because the contrast is our commissioner, Larry Scott, a former tennis player whose all-time record was 1-18 as a pro.
Hey, it's like the Pac-12. Perfect.
And the CEO of the Women's Tennis Association comes in, and I think we've seen a regression. He's getting paid $5.3 million a year, Mike. Sankey's getting paid $2 million. We could take two Sankeys here in the Pac-12 for one Larry Scott.
Yeah, I think they could use them, because they're not getting much bang for their buck. And, you know, I've seen where I think they're – isn't their office like in some of the most expensive real estate in the country in San Francisco? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what in the hell they're doing there. I mean, it's almost like it's more, you know, style than substance or anything with that, with the Pac-12. And I'm surprised that guy still has a job. He must be locked in for a long time, because, you know, not to go back to the DirecTV deal, but I don't understand how that's still a thing. I mean, how many years are we into the Pac-12 network and we don't have that resolved? So, yeah, I mean, that guy just seems to be doing a horrible job from the outside looking in. And I don't think I've heard a smart thing that he's done since, you know, he tried to bring in Texas and Oklahoma. That seemed to be like the move he was trying to make. And that may have been the move to keep him going, because, yeah, I don't know what in the hell they're doing. And don't they have – is Colorado's in that league now too, right?
Yeah, that's the one thing I think – Larry Scott's kind of lived off was the idea that he brought in Colorado and Utah and got out to the Pacific time zone. But the expansion idea, my question to you is really knowing Larry Scott and the idea that he lays his hat on being the conference of champions, how long would he last as commissioner of the SEC?
I don't know if you guys, I'm trying to think of the guy's name. There was an Alabama coach. I think his name was DeBose, where he was named head coach, and then before the season even started, he got spotted at some like strip club or something, and he was fired before he coached the first game. That reminds me of Larry Scott. I don't think he'd make the first game. He would get fired during the season. It'd be a huge scandal, and that's kind of how I would imagine it playing out.
So, Ben, wasn't that your old coach?
Yeah, let me correct you. That was my old coach, Mike Price.
Okay.
He bolted after going and beating Texas, I believe, down in the Holiday Bowl, and bolted for Bama. I think two alumni the alumni group didn't really like that. Hijacked him, threw him in a strip club, took some pictures, and he was gone the next day. So.
Now you see, I actually got nothing. Well, not that they. I was going to say I got nothing wrong with that. I do got to take issue with trying to blackmail, as you say there, but. You know, I got no problem with these coaches going to the strip club. Like I always tell people, I always hated Hugh Freeze, because I knew he was, you know, a two-faced guy that hid behind his religion, that I don't even think he was really that religious. But when he got caught getting all these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hand jobs by these hookers, you know, I was like, my God, I could hang out with this guy. I like him a lot more than when he's lying through his face. But yeah, so I got nothing against your old coach there, but that is his legacy here in the SEC. I'm afraid to say.
I don't think he would have stuck around long regardless. So, but back to Sankey. Theoretically, where would we find Sankey on a Saturday morning in mid-October?
When he's getting done with his front squats, like I told you, I mean, the guy runs marathons. He does all this triathlon stuff, but. From each Saturday, I think he's typically going to the biggest games and across the SEC. And, one thing that is kind of interesting about the SEC, because I was never, you know, they had a guy by the name of Mike Slive, and he was, you know, nationally recognized as, arguably the best court commissioner in SEC history, and then turns it over to longtime deputy there, Sankey. And, you know, I thought he kind of did a really poor job when he first got in. There was, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Florida and LSU had some back and forth because there was, you know, a hurricane coming through, and there was leaked emails between Florida and LSU, and it was just public sparring, and he just never really got in the middle of that. But that was his first season, so, you know, maybe it was early to judge, because now that all this coronavirus stuff is going on, it seems like he's really stepped up and been an outstanding leader. So I got to give him credit for that. But, you know, one initiative that they did last year that didn't make any sense to me, we talk about this SEC and how fired up these fans get. The main target, it doesn't matter if their team's horrible on Saturday, it's not their fault, it's the damn officials. And they've introduced this SEC officiating account, and it usually takes about 4 or 5 days before they tweet anything out. It's usually this horrible blown call and why it wasn't blown and why they got it right, and they never respond to any of the fans. But that's my favorite account. I encourage all your listeners to go out there and follow SEC officiating, not for their content, because as soon as they post something, I mean, within minutes, you're talking hundreds of replies of just these redneck people who can't even spell, just cursing and mad as hell. I mean, it's the damn funniest thing on Twitter. So, yeah, I don't understand what in the hell they were thinking with that SEC officiating account, but I hope Greg Sankey's not running that when he's going to SEC games here, because he may be tailgating after the games, getting drunk based on the tweets I've seen from SEC officiating.
Mike, you give us an idea. You obviously didn't watch any Pac-12 games. If you did, I would think the Pac-12 officiating is probably worse than the SEC. So K-Win and I might have to fire up our own Twitter handle and start tweeting out.
Pac-12 after dark. That's why they say that, huh?
Exactly. So no one can watch how bad the officiating is.
I thought it's Pac-12 after dark because no one can get the network channel.
Who would you hire as the next commissioner of the SEC and why? You can vote yourself too.
The next commissioner of the SEC, I'd probably go with the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum. I mean, how could you go wrong with that guy? I mean, that guy's, he writes books about the SEC, knows everybody in the league. Of course, you know, I don't know if he would keep doing his show and still talk trash, but I think he might, because for your listeners that have not heard any of the classic Feinbaum stuff, I mean, it is fantastic. I've read his books, and I mean, he'll call these coaches illiterate and talk about how, you know, their team sucks. And then these coaches will read the articles to their players. And then Feinbaum will write, you know, stories about how he turns out the coach can read, you know what I mean? Like this guy was totally unfiltered. And now that he works for the SEC, I think he has to tone it down. So if he's the commissioner, I mean, who's he going to have to answer to? So I would like to see him kind of get more unfiltered. And I don't think he could go wrong with Paul Feinbaum.
That bit you had with slowing down his interview and cracking beers, I loved, by the way. that was good.
We're always cracking beers on my show, but fortunately we've not gotten that slurred.
I love it.
To kind of wrap up, Mike, we do this thing called the West Coast Swing, where we just ask you some questions. They're kind of rapid fire questions, rapid fire answers. So no thought involved. Just you got to say what you think and speak what you feel. Does that sound good?
Gotcha. Yeah, let's do it.
So Ole Miss hired Kiffin. Mississippi State has Leach. Who wins more games this year?
I'm going to go Ole Miss because, you know, I know they only won 4 games last year, but they were in many games. I don't know if you guys, I assume you watched the Cal game. Now that you talk about Pac-12 refs, I mean, they kind of screwed Ole Miss on that one at the goal line. So, but that was one of the few games where Ole Miss was in it to the very end, could have went the other way. So I really like the talent, and this is a name for you, John Rhys Plumlee, Ole Miss quarterback. I think that kid's going to be a star under Lane Kiffin. So I'm going to go Ole Miss.
All right, we'll check him out. Najee Harris, originally from Northern California, running back for Alabama. Who would you say his NFL player comp is?
You know, they said Adrian Peterson coming out, but I don't really get that from him. I get more of a maybe like an Eddie George type, because he's kind of a bigger back, very physical, but it doesn't seem like he's going to, you know, outrun anyone in the secondary necessarily, but you know, he's built enough to where he'll bowl through linemen and linebackers. And, you know, I was never a big fan of Najee Harris. I thought he was kind of a bust coming into last season, but towards the tail end, I thought he was Alabama's best offensive player. I think he's going to have a huge year.
All right, Mike, now the easy stuff. Give me the top three places to tailgate in the SEC.
Ooh, number one, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Bonnaroo, but the only thing close to Bonnaroo is going down to a game down in Baton Rouge, Death Valley. Those people turn every damn Saturday into like a festival. I never seen so many felonies on a way to walking into the stadium as I did that day. My God, I just, you know, I'm just thankful I wasn't with my mother. She would have had a heart attack. But LSU, number one for sure. Ole Miss, very underrated. I think probably the most beautiful women in the SEC. Got to go down to the Grove if you can make it. And then number three, I'd probably go Georgia. Georgia's got a really underrated campus, probably my favorite campus in the SEC. And now that that team is rolling, yeah, the drinks are flowing in Athens.
You forgot one that I thought you'd bring up for sure. One of only two places where you can boat up, I think, in the country and actually boat gate, Tennessee.
Well, no doubt, but there's not been a lot of partying. And then that's coming from a Tennessee graduate. I mean, my God, we had a boat catch fire during the Vol Navy last year. I believe it was Georgia State. And then we should have all known that was a bad omen, that Tennessee was somehow going to lose to, I think they were a 23-point favorite, somehow found a way to lose to Georgia State. So I'm not putting Tennessee on that list until they're competitive again in the SEC.
So don't they have a top three recruiting class? So maybe that will turn quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. And I'm sure, you know, the bag man has returned to Knoxville with Philip Fulmer running the show. I couldn't be happier.
What SEC coach, Mike, would you most like to grab a beer with?
Probably Coach O right now. I mean, because my God, what can that man not do? Just got divorced. He's single, ready to mingle. I mean, imagine what he can be capturing in Louisiana right now. I mean, could any woman say no to that man? So, yeah, Coach O, that's an easy answer right now.
The 2020 season kicks off September 5th, if all still goes well, and it's in Texas, USC versus Bama. What's the final score?
Probably like 63-7. I mean, USC, I mean, I was surprised they're even going to show up for that one. I mean, they got slaughtered last time, right? And yeah, I don't know. I just don't got a ton of faith in it seems like they're just, I don't know what the hell they're doing. They're hanging their coach out to dry, either commit to the guy or not. And maybe Nick Saban will finish him off for him.
USC and Oregon are ranked 1 and 2 headed in the season for the Pac-12. Where would they land in your SEC power rankings?
You know, I actually got a lot of respect for Oregon after watching them play Auburn. I really thought they outplayed Auburn, and Auburn had an outstanding team last year, just really tough schedule. They lost a couple games, but, you know, I would definitely put Oregon in the top half. I really like Mario Cristobal and the physicality he's bringing to that league. I think that's going to set the Ducks apart because it just seems like they're, you know, continuing to climb and getting the right players into that system. They're beating out some SEC schools for some kids. So Oregon, I'd probably put them maybe 4 or 5. Probably 4 or 5 in the SEC, maybe even as high as number 3, because I don't know, you know, how elite some of these teams in the SEC are just yet. And then USC, I'd probably put them at like 12.
right ahead of the Vols or behind the Vols?
Oh, definitely behind the Vols. That's why JT Daniels, if you're listening, come on down.
One of your episodes, you brought up stimulus check for a Heisman bet. Back to the Pac-12, you have to put some money on a player. Who are you putting it on without knowing the odds?
That's a tough one for me. Probably, you know, I have heard a lot about the quarterback. I can't even tell you his name, for Arizona State that Herm Edwards signed and brought in there. And from everything I've heard, he's a solid player. And I think, you know, we all kind of laughed at that hire, Herm Edwards, but it seems like they've really got it turned around there in Tempe. And, you know, that could be it seems like nowadays the Heisman, you know, guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, they're expected to win. But as soon as they have a bad game, It's like, we got to write them off and they're not worthy. I don't know why the Heisman has turned into that. Now it seems more about, you know, the emerging player that no one knew about, that, you know, maybe Arizona State's only projected to win 7-8 games, but they win 10 or 11. Let's give it to, you know, the star player on that team. So I'd probably have to go with him now that I can't really think of anybody on Oregon's roster.
All the games are after dark. We don't blame you. Probably in bed. if you're up at 10 a.m. and having a good time, the old ball breakfast, as you called it, yeah, I don't blame you for not being able to stay up and watch these guys play. So let's finish up on JT. He's probably the talk of the SEC at this point. And is he headed there? What are you hearing? You know, if you had to pitch him for any one team, what would your pitch be? Who has the most glaring hole, or who needs him right away?
I think Tennessee, because I think they've really got a good defense under Jeremy Pruitt. That looked like one of the better units in the SEC, and a lot of those guys returning next season. But they've got an outstanding offensive line. They've got some good runners, but they got this quarterback named Jarrett Garantano. He's a nice kid, but he just is so inconsistent. Like I said, against Georgia State, he'll cost you the game. And then against Missouri, he'll throw for 500 yards. So, you know, you got a quarterback that is that inconsistent. That's a guy that's going to get a coach fired. So I think if Tennessee had a solid answer at quarterback, I mean, I think legitimately they're top 15, potentially knocking on the door at top 10. They're just really that quarterback away. Now, of course, another team that I don't know if they have any interest in JT Daniels, but I sure would be LSU. I know replacing Joe Burrow, that would be, you know, a huge hole to step into, but they've got the talent down there. You just saw what they did for Joe Burrow. If they can make that same sales pitch to JT Daniels, they do have a kid coming back that they got a lot of confidence in, but I don't think he's anything special based on everything I've heard and seen about JT Daniels. I mean, he could be, you know, Trevor Lawrence-esque type special. And if you can get that guy on your campus, I don't see how you can't do it. If you're LSU, you got to make that move.
I like it.
I agree as well.
Okay. Wynn, you got anything else?
No, I think I'm good. Mike, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online and hear more about your podcast?
Absolutely. So I'm on Twitter at SEC Mike. So it's pretty easy to find. I'm always talking shit and just saying, you know, random crazy stuff. Yeah. Don't take everything I say seriously, because my God, you'd be surprised. Some of these people, I'm surprised they're not knocking at my door, because if I say something bad against Alabama or Auburn or what have you, I mean, I'm getting death threats. It's always great. These Florida fans in particular, they hate me, even though they've won like 15 out of 16 against Tennessee. You think they'd be able to take a joke, but no, I'm getting death threats from them. So, you know, it's a lot of good fun there on the Twitters. But again, don't take anything I say too seriously. And then I got a podcast called That SEC Podcast, found on any podcast platform out there.
And Mike, I wanted to wrap with this. We back in high school, we used to play a team, and they'd crush us in football. So we'd start a chant, and it would go something like this. And then it would go, "Let's play another particular sport." So for the SEC, I'm going to say this: let's play water polo, volleyball, soccer, anything but football, because coming up, we're going to get railed. So we appreciate the time and certainly appreciate your feedback. Hopefully we'll get you on midway through the season or after another big SEC weekend. Certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I was wondering why you did the water polo there. I was thinking that's got to be the only Pac-12 sport they excel in, right?
Mike, we're the conference of champions in everything but football, basketball, and baseball. So
just the ones that matter, right?
Yeah. That's right. We're really good at the country club sports.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot.
See you.
Seattle, Portland, LA, San Fran, San Diego, Scottsdale, Phoenix. This is Kay Wynn.
And Big Ben.
And we are Western Standard Time. WSD Podcast. We're everywhere online. Podbean, iTunes, Apple Podcast. What do we talk about, Ben?
We got all sports, NBA, NFL, MLB, Pac-12, WCC. If it's on the West Coast, we got you covered.
You know what else we got you covered? A little lifestyle, a little fun, a little banter to lighten up your day.
There are 5-minute life guides.
So whether you live in Seattle, Kansas City, Frisco, Texas, Boston, Worcester, Florida, and you love West Coast sports, make sure you follow us, download us. New episode every Friday.
I'm interested to see Kiffin and Leach, the Egg Bowl. There's one game I would want to go to this year. It'd be the Egg Bowl.
Where is it this year?
Well, where'd the guy lift his leg and piss, and then the coaches ultimately got fired because of it? I think it was an Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, because the bushes are right there.
Yeah, never mind. I don't want to go to Starkville. I want to go to a Grove for the Egg Bowl.
No. Ole Miss is – isn't Ole Miss have the bushes?
If you saw him peeing and there was bushes behind him, they played last year.
Got it. So it's going
– at Ole Miss. Now it's in Stark Vegas. That might still be fun.
Yeah.
Depending on what Leach does down there.
So Kiffin went SC, Tennessee, Raiders, Alabama, FAU, Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Wow. He keeps getting contracts.
Dot the map. Dot the map. So you start at USC, then what? Tennessee?
Then you went to Tennessee.
Back to the Raiders, all the way across to Florida.
No. Before that, he was at Bama. He was like the quarterback coach or something like that.
Yeah, you went to Bama. And then Florida.
Yeah.
The Owls.
Yeah.
So he went from what? Trojans to Volunteers to Raiders to Crimson Tide to the Owls. And now to
Rebels.
Rebels. Running Rebs. No, Rebels. His recruiting network's probably pretty vast.